Welcome to Packet Pushers. This is Greg Farrow, and today we're at the IETF 99 conference, where the future of the internet is being wrestled to the ground like a big angry bear as a group of nerds who, let's just say they're fashion challenged and often personality challenged. It's quite unique here at the IETF.
Some of the really objects to that.
It's not present company accepted, of course, but some of the people in the sessions downstairs really looked like they went on a war with a fashion. You know, they're committing fashion crimes on a war scale kind of thing. So I don't think these people get out very often. But let's face it, the future of the internet is not is a road paved with drafts, mailing lists, and rather unusual processes.
And grey haired ponytails.
Yes.
And guys who maybe should be going. Yeah. Never mind.
There's a lot of people who need a good health program and so forth. But, you know, everybody lives their life the way they like. And who am I to judge? So I'm joined today by Russ White. You'll know Russ, of course. He's very well known in the industry. Russ?
Hi, good morning, Greg. You look as tired as I feel.
I always look like this. This is my best. This is as good as it gets. And Sue?
I'm Sue Harris. For my sins, I still chair the working group that handles PGP and several other new things. Plus, you know, I've done several strange things in the internet. Well, we'll go into that moment.
So when Sue says she chairs IDR, you're supposed to out there in the listening audience say,
IDR is inter-domain routing.
And it's the one that takes care of BGP. And that's, I think, the topic we were going to pick up
on
today.
That's right. Now, I've been getting on my favorite unicorn and riding it around and yelling and screaming that BGP is not a universal tool. It's not the... It is, as in terms of it being the leather man of the internet, you know, those Swiss Army knives where there's one tool for everything. The BGP is not that. BGP is about, as in my view, is roughly equivalent to taking a stone and tying it to the top of a stick to hit things with. And we've tried to turn it into a leather man. And
the problem with the leather man is it becomes a trash can.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we can always get five more tools in there if we just make it a bit wider and a bit more useful. And eventually it looks like a stone which should be attached to the bed.
You know, the problem is BGP started out something totally different. It started out to fix a problem.
Mm. As a Band-Aid.
It started out because I like to sleep. We were running network operations for the start of the internet, we started out with a protocol EGP, and it used to just blast out all the routes every 3 minutes. And when we got past maybe...
Think of a very slow rip.
Yeah, think of a very, very slow rip.
In its defense, there were very slow computers in those days.
Yes, yeah. with very big iron. The ISIS were not working well. Yeah. I recommend Doc off record to design the world, but never to code. That's another story. Yeah. You know, how can an ISIS wave for about 6 to 8 hours? Well, ask Jakob. He did, and he would never say he was coding. But BGP came because that's what we designed, and it was so bad that we said, well, you know, gosh, we should send an incremental updates. What a concept. You know, the first year science student. But that was the real thing. We had a problem. We fixed it. We fixed it with something that looked like the first one. And we then said, gee, it works. So let's see.
And
if
this was before network engineers understood cap theorem.
Yeah.
And by stable state.
By stable state. it is pre-dawn of the internet, 88 or so.
Yeah. So really, I've always imagined BGP to be best summarized as two companies have to exchange routing information, right? Two separate companies.
Two separate. We actually
that probably don't get along.
Actually, we started out with two academic universities, and I think you can envision how they get along well.
Yeah. So it was really designed to be in a hostile environment that we want to communicate at a networking level, but we don't actually want to share routing tables or...
That's right.
We want to share the minimum amount of information.
Because what was happening when they tried to share is they had waving wars. And the network did the football wave up and down. And it wasn't as fun.
And it was primarily about policy, not about routes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we think of BGP as a routing protocol.
Yes.
It's really not.
It's just a policy protocol. Yeah, it's a policy edge.
Mm. Yeah. Okay. And the policy is expressed as, I have these routes.
I trust you to send me this route, but if you send me something else, well, and that's it. I mean, when people say, is it a routing? No, it's a policy bearer. Mm. It's where one network that doesn't touch the other says, I trust you to send me these.
Right.
You may not send all of these, but don't you share that because I'll drop it on the floor. Now, peering policy is all about making that money based.
And or to add to that, if you think about it in terms of BGP and IBGP, the entire game is that the local AS makes the routing decision about which edge to exit from.
That's
so
right.
So all the policy is internal, right? I mean, you send minimal policy across the AS boundary. And what you're trying to do is you're actually trying to give the local AS, the local operator, all the control over their own internal routing.
So the assumption broadly is that I have a network, a carrier network, an operator network, or an enterprise network, and there are several exit points from the network, all potentially connecting to the same destination. So one autonomous system may connect to another autonomous system via five autonomous systems, and therefore you need to select one of the five. A packet can't go through all five.
Well, it could.
In the case of the internet, it quite often does traverse the longest possible path. The internet is not optimized.
No, it is really a protection. Mm. I don't trust you, so please don't send me that because...
Yeah, you can send me hints about where you would like me to enter your AS or where I would like you to enter my AS or whatever. I can send you hints about why you should use me instead of someone else to transit your traffic. But ultimately... It's not up to me how other people route things.
Yeah, once you give them your packet, you have to cross your fingers and hope it gets where it needs to be.
That's exactly right.
Right, because they're not you. They don't, and they have no obligation to you.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And this is something that actually starts a lot of the problems in the BGP community, I think, is that particularly on the security side, we want to say, oh, look, I can tell them how to route my packet.
Yep.
Oh, no. I think you forgot the part about it not being a circuit switch network.
and that's the problem is that you really can't say anything other than here's the best luck.
Please.
That's right. That's all Matt is.
Yeah.
Please.
Yes. Matt is. Please.
Would you?
Yeah. Well, please, because if you send it down my, very slow pipe or very congested pipe versus something that's got a lot of extra bandwidth, you're not going to get much.
It's please. Sorry about that.
Please. Sorry about that. It really never goes beyond that. No matter what you say, as far as putting a lot of weight with it. With L2 VPNs, L3 VPNs, all sorts of stuff, you are just adding weight to the please.
So in terms of a policy construct, it's a bit like buying something from a vendor, I often imagine, which is I go to the vendor and I say, I want to buy a product that works as you've just promised it. But there's no guarantees that the product will work or that will be delivered on time.
They'll support it.
Or that they'll support it correctly, yes. And roughly, it's there's a fair intention. There's an intention by both parties to, potentially do the right thing and to meet the policy as promised, but the actual delivery may or may not occur. Is that a fair?
That's a very fair thing because what happens inside of BGP is it really is a gentleman's agreement. Mm. Whether we're gentlemen in this day and age, whether the peering is a gentleman's agreement. In fact, the first transit were just gentleman's agreement because we have enough bandwidth. Mm. Now we do some things happen like hot potato routing. Mm. Oh, this is going to take too much of my network, so I'm going to exit the fastest way I can and give it to you because this isn't traffic I'm getting paid for.
Mm.
So much different than when you have a customer relationship. And there are customer relationships with BGP. We just sort of hide them behind.
Yeah, well, I think we also get lost in a lot of practitioners are still wrestling with how BGP works. And I do often wonder if the vendors have made it so complicated, and the ITF have made BGP so complicated that getting down to the root purpose or the core purpose of what BGP exists for is sometimes lost in a.
And actually, many of the people who try to use. Who have adopted BGP for the data center have jettisoned a 90% of BGP.
Yes.
And we keep, in the standardization, we keep the base specs still very simple. To be honest, because I've been there, adding too much weight to a rocket has always shown NASA that you can crash.
Mm.
And adding too much to BGP will cause eventual slow down and crash.
As an example, I remember when I first started Cisco, must have been 96, 97. I had a Sun workstation sitting on my desk, and I had full access to iOS source code. Mm. In those days, I don't know if tech engineers still have full access to source code, in those days, all four routing protocols combined were 40,000 lines of code.
Yeah.
I mean, BGP by itself is probably, 200,000 lines of code at this point.
Yep.
I don't even know because I haven't looked in a long time.
There's in there now. Yeah,
I could go look at free range routing, but free range routing is actually pretty lightweight in terms of feature set. So you must take a commercial implementation and think about, holy mackerel, EVPNs and 14, not only the 14-step decision process, but now I have like an infinite number of decision processes.
And infinite number of MPLS extensions and AFIs and IPv6.
When I founded a company that sold white box software, that's a very key point. What we learned very carefully is to provide things in waves. Mm. People who wanted the very simple BGP, for example, even doing small things, jettisoned 90% of it.
Right.
And unless you kept it simple, unless you kept the policy engines extremely simple for the case, that's also where many of the data centers people started. And when we realized we were cycling back to people that simple, about 3 or 4 years ago, we started making improvements in sort of the standards in order to make it easy for people to jettison the extra.
Yeah.
For example, data centers used to try something where they use IT mechanisms in order to create the BGP peering. Mm. They would use dev op tests and they would thrust out configurations, but they ran into problems that they didn't have enough AS numbers.
Yes.
Because if you have a data center and you're going at...
We still don't, by the way.
Yeah, well, if you're building leaf... leaf spine type architectures, you need a lot of ASs in the spine.
Sorry, Sue. We actually need like a 32-bit AS number field about now.
Yeah. We already have a 32-bit.
No, I'm sorry, 64. Yeah. 128.
I agree. You know, the ability to get a variable-length AS number is still challenged.
So you heard it here when you see the new draft come out for variable-length AS numbers.
I proposed it last time. Don't
back up on that, what we're saying is that in leaf spine architectures that are running BGP, you need a lot of autonomous system numbers in the spine area so that you can get the path vector algorithm to load balance across. And you consume an awful lot of... You're basically allocating one AS per switch in some places.
Yes, mm-hmm. You are,
in
actually.
The spine. The spine gets one AS per switch.
And usually it's in at least three tiers of a five-stage spine and leap.
Three-tier, five-stage class, yeah.
Well, out of five stages, you would have three. The three center are all... Every switch in that or every router
So this
that
is not a problem that everybody has, but for those people who have it, they need 1,000 private... AS is in
more than 1,000.
They need much more than 1,000.
Yes,
because
And so we created.
We need AS number NAT.
Well, we have enough 4x. We have 4x AS. Yeah, I know. And actually, there is AS. There is AS NAT. You forgot that many of we actually have implementations of AS NAT. So if we go down that track, everyone has done a hack, but. I just want to give that as an example. Mm. There is much more than 1,000, 4,000, or even half a million AS numbers that are private.
Yes.
Just so people can do that, because that makes sense.
Yep.
It's the simple BGP.
Yep.
But they still have, it's still a path vector, and a path vector is nothing other than a distance vector with a limit.
Yes.
And that it's not a... It just says no more.
Like mathematically, it's an incredibly simple. If you're using BGP to calculate paths instead of propagate policy, then at that point it's RIP.
It's RIP.
It's a distance vector
or a hop vector.
It's a hop vector, but you actually have a vector. RIP actually doesn't have a vector.
Yeah, and you have hop.
So you have a vector.
Just for the people listening at home, a vector in RIP, when you send a route, the only thing that you're calculating the metadata on the route is hop counts. You don't actually know much more than there's 10 hops to the destination.
That's right.
In the case of a routing entry in a BGP, you have the route and you also have an AS number, and then the number of AS numbers tell you the number of hops, which gives you a rough estimate of the distance
and a cluster list in the case of which is essentially just an AS path for IBGP,
which is a broken AS path, but we can go into that. Right. Yachav Rechter,
I think he's retired now, and he doesn't listen to Packet Pushers.
He doesn't listen to Packet Pushers. So I'm glad to say this. Used to say two things. You know, it's all about making business work, which is an unusually clued in factor for other things. And second, if it took to make business and things work to put Shakespeare in BGP, he would put Shakespeare in BGP.
Yeah.
Now I'm not quite that.
But Yakov taught me to write RFCs.
Yeah.
And it's taken me like 10 years to recover.
Yes, I know that. But the point is, Yakov's both good and bad in putting it what you need, because you do not need...
Let's attack the reuse. So one of the things that vendors often say to me is that, you know, everybody knows BGP. Everybody's comfortable with BGP. Reusing BGP is the lazy... And I just sit there and go, yeah, it's the lazy way out, right?
It is.
It is the lazy way out.
But back up, I mean...
But it's not that hard to, like... The assumption, and a lot of vendors tell me that we know the BGP code works, we don't want to rewrite it again. And I'm looking at them going like, "It's BGP is not that hard. It's a Python script or a Go script, right?"
The basic packet piece is dead simple.
Yes.
What they mean when they say they don't want to rewrite it is they don't want to rewrite the policy engine.
Yeah.
And that's the piece that's tough. Now, that could...
It's hard to optimize. It's very easy to write BGP. It's very hard to write BGP that works fast.
Yes. Yep. And you know, I hate to say it, but as a long-term BGP person and someone who ran a company that tried to optimize BGP, I actually have an incredible algorithms on how it actually works within a software and what to test and what to look, so that I could take every BGP and I can tell you about how much it's going to converge.
But Greg, I want to go back to your statement about vendors for a second, though. This is not just a BGP problem with vendors, is it?
No.
It's an everything problem. They make everything into a Swiss Army knife. And this is actually my argument for White Box quite often, is that I need to weed the garden, okay? I don't need the supersized Swiss Army knife plus Leatherman tool that's 10 feet wide in every spot in my network. And it's actually overcomplicating networks to actually do this. And we're doing the same thing with BGP.
Say to me, but what if I need it in 5 years' time?
Well, you're not going to be running that equipment in 5 years' time, so...
So okay. Pick a new load.
People don't... Now, the challenge there is that this comes back to my debate around we pay too much for our equipment. If you're paying $1 million for a pair of chassis switches to go into your data center... You need to keep them for 10 years to get your ROI, right? Mm-hmm. So you do need something... You do need something that's going to have 10 years of viability. And my point has been to people to stop buying $1 million switches, buy $50,000 worth of switches and start throwing them out every 2 to 3 years.
See, but that goes back to the very thing that I ran a company that in starting in 98 started to head toward software that would go for white boxes, cheap white end boxes. And when I did this and started it, Tony Lee said to me, well, the value's in the software.
Yeah.
But how you monetize it in the hardware, and you'll never get it done. And my answer is, yes, you will, because people are going to see this value you've just talked about, and they're going to go to white box switches eventually. Whether it's today, I hope to be on the front end.
Yep.
But when you do that and you build software for that, you have two things that you have to do outside that the companies don't do. One, you create a software that is blazingly easy to DevOp or to test. If you don't have automated testings, I still say that when you put everything in once, your testing does two things. It slows down the release procedure, and as you see companies grow, whatever large vendor, their procedure gets slower and slower, and they start investing tremendous things to be able to handle the Combinatics.
Yep.
How do I combine this plus this plus this? If you went back to what Russ was saying and you said, I want the box to do this, I want to pick up the latest hardware, I want to streamline it, and I want to be able to compile it, and stop taking crap in if you can't figure that things. Every time you put a piece of software in, I used to have a rule as a CTO and as a founder, either you come in with a test plan that tells me how you're going to test that software automatically, combine and how you're going to test the common addicts. Mm. And if you can't give me both, don't give me the piece of software to put in, engineer. Go back to your desk and figure the hell out how you're going
to
do it.
So this comes back to simplicity, but also modularity. So
modularity, yes.
This idea of saying, I don't want these features in my plane, so take them out.
Yeah, don't turn them on. No, that's not what I said.
Mm. Just don't use them.
I don't want them at all. I don't want to not
you
use
want
them.
The reason
I don't
that
want the
it
code.
Costs,
like, you know, we're seeing licensing schemes where the operating system that goes on the box costs $20,000 to $50,000 for the software. Look, Microsoft Word delivers more value than your average routing stack in terms of, you know, capabilities and useful business stuff. But why does it cost $50,000 to buy a software license? I mean, assuming that the software licensing scheme can actually be worked out, but that's a different discussion for another day, right?
Yeah.
It's not that...
Well, I think it goes back to scale out and scale up, too, right? I mean, the networking world has always scaled up.
Yes.
And we haven't figured out how to scale out like the server and the storage guys have figured out how to do.
Okay, so here's another one of my pet theories is that what we're seeing in networking is a transition where before we used to have relatively few network devices. And it was certainly possible for one person to sort of, in an enterprise or in a carrier, to have a model of all the switches in or the networking nodes in their network.
I've worked for several companies that had one router. No, literally.
Yeah.
One. Mm.
Talk about IXPs and things, right?
No. I mean like big enterprise companies that had one router.
One core switch in the data center?
One router and a bunch of layer 2 switches hanging off of the one router.
Oh, yes. No, I actually work with a customer right now who has exactly that.
But scaling out
2,500 hosts on a single VLAN.
But scaling out as much is cheaper. When we were designing these white box softwares, we were designing them so they could fit in a small piece. Maybe you want to have a small piece of OSPF, maybe a small piece of ISIs, maybe a very small thing of BGP. But what you wanted is that very base thing to be able to be in the cheap switch. Perhaps it's in their light. Yeah. The switches that you put inside of a Wi-Fi in your wall. Yeah. If you can, you should be able to design software that goes from that small piece to the large piece. And I told my engineers at that time, if you can't do both, you come to me and I will tell you how you do both with algorithms. But that's the problem.
Right.
They haven't looked at that and they haven't refactored software very often. I have built software for some of these people and sold, in many cases, to over 500 devices who then took the software and said, I got to add weight. And I'm like, okay, you're my customer. Have a nice life.
Yeah.
But if you go back to the white box people, that's what they're learning again. You can build
Facebook
software.
Facebook is building it. Seeing the cloud companies rebuild white box simply because they can take all the stuff out that's not needed.
That's exactly right.
I believe, you know, the story I heard about Facebook is they've had problems where the IP multicast engine caused failures in their data centers.
Yes.
Companies like Apple had outages because of 802.1x code, but they weren't using that.
Yeah, you know, my first page out when I was in global escalation at Cisco for a crash on one of my pieces of code was I had modified EIGRP code as a test only and shipped it to a customer to run in their lab, and I got a page out at 2:00 in the morning that said, "By the way, your code crashed." And my first answer was, this is a lab test. It's not supposed to be in production, so why are you calling me at 2:00 in the morning?
Yeah.
And they said, well, the customer put it into production because they liked it so much. Okay, well, that's one issue.
Okay.
And the second issue is they sent me the stack trace, and I decoded it and used GDB to track the code, and it was actually a bug in X25 that had been triggered because I had made a change in EIGRP. So, you know, you just, like, what?
So that gets back to the common addicts.
So let's come back to BGP. And
okay.
So I mean, we wanted to sort of have this discussion around. Now, we were talking last night about the concept of using the inside of the iBGP, where your BGP peers start talking to each other, and the internal BGP. And you were saying last night about how link state algorithms could be used to, well, massively improve this performance.
Right, yes. So... But before you go there, just one comment. I think we're doing the same thing with BGP. We are trying to scale a single protocol up, right? And we're just trying to keep piling stuff into the same protocol and hoping that it continues to work.
So we should use scale in terms of number of routes and the speed of route changes.
Well, there's no reason not to invent a new protocol for a data center.
Yes.
Right? There's no reason to have boutique not to have boutique protocols. Babel is a perfect example. It's HomeNet. right? Yep. So you invent a new protocol just for HomeNet. There's nothing wrong with this. I mean,
it's not like there's an existing protocol to displace.
Well, and there are existing protocols that work, but again, there's no, or could be made to work, but there's no reason not to have different protocols in different places in your network. There is this thing called redistribution. Mm. Now, you know, I dislike redistribution, but nonetheless, sometimes it's necessary, and sometimes the best thing to do is to build an optimal solution for a particular environment, mm. and that's the way it is.
So, for example, if the thing is there are algorithms, there are base algorithms,
What's an algorithm? Most of these people out here don't even know.
Mm. Okay.
I'm sorry.
So BGP is a distant vector with a path on it to keep it from looping. IGPs like OSPF have a shortest path distance algorithm. Mm. These algorithms are variances. You can put them together in five different ways, and as you're saying, each environment may want you to say, use this portion, like a screwdriver for our plumbers.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have a piece of plumbing that uses one size fit all. You use one for different screwdrivers, you have different things.
There's Phillips, there's straight blades, there's power torques now, and, you know, blah, blah,
right.
blah. You know.
But the whole point is, if you understand what you're doing inside of environment, you should be able to replay these protocols. There's nothing magic about the packet processing, but the protocols can do it, for example, Babel or BGP. Now, let's go back to the history inside of BGP because you want to come into the IGP. The IBGP, when we did that, we had this token ring. We'll go back into history. That's yeah. that's a pre-Ethernet Ethernet, which is good and gone.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody cried any tears
when token ring went
away. No. That or ArcNet.
That's bad. But in the current environment, you know, that was just best effort for what was happening. It would be a whole lot smarter if you have a large IGP
yep.
to actually, as Russ and I have looked at several times, replace IBGP. There's really two protocols, EBGP and IBGP, and they're welded together because that's yep. what they could do.
Yep.
If you replace the IBGP with a smarter protocol, with something that was tuned for either data centers or for your carrier, you could take the convergence.
So let's back up on what IBGP does. I have a BGP data stack, a database, a list of routes. Sometimes people call them RIPs, right? But that fundamentally is a database of routes that I've received from other people, from the external parties.
Mm-hmm.
So now I have my autonomous system, and I've got a number of routers facing externally, and that data structure is full of routes. Well, all of those eBGP instances or all those BGP instances need to share their routes to each other.
Right.
So originally the idea was IBGP. This is how we replicate data between those data structures.
We were trying to have a shared database.
Hmm.
Yeah,
and a database that was consistent.
Yes.
A replicated one.
And you
one.
Have to, because otherwise, if you've got a router on the left and a router on the right and they've both got BGP tables, they have to be synchronized in some way.
And a router in the middle.
Router A.
Shake it all about.
Yeah. Router A gets a bunch of routes and has to tell router B. Otherwise, router B doesn't know about router A. So IBGP was fundamentally a way for these BGP routing tables to synchronize. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah. And sometimes in the early days, we really needed to do that because some of the early equipment sort of wasn't so hot.
Yeah. Software is hot.
Right. Software is
hot. And then if you think about the way BGP figures out loop freeness, it's through the AS path.
Yeah.
But now when I'm within an AS,
I no longer
have an AS path.
That's right.
You can't figure it, which is why
you get into cluster.
So that's why IBGP is there, is to literally share the data structure or the database of RIBs from router A to router B, or all the routers that face externally to the network. So the original way you set it up was that you had BGP instance, here's my two routers inside the same autonomous system share databases, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Pretty simple. Really, really simple thing. But
then people put networks in between the two routers.
That's right. The networks grew and scaled up in volume in terms of number of devices and speed, and we got more CPU. And so now we're sitting there saying to ourselves, is there something that we can do better?
To exchange these databases.
To exchange these databases, because IBGP may or may not be the best way.
Right.
And it adds, and actually the way we do it adds considerably to the fluctuation.
Mm.
Adds
to churn and to convergence time.
And convergence time. If you get the equations that I worked on in the tests, again, because we did a lot of DevOps tests in the software I developed, really showed that that was one of the major problems. And it's probably one of the causes for EBGP fluctuation. And again, I worked with lots of data to get that from that people have been keeping for now 20 years. But we still haven't fixed the IBGP. If we could have a seamless database.
So let's just deal into what's wrong there. So if I have a, there might be some counterintuitive stuff here. If I have a, you know, 2,000 routes sitting in a BGP rib and I'm going to synchronize them over IBGP, why does that matter? Where's the problem?
Well,
it's not 2,000 routes. If it were 2,000 routes, it would be easy.
Easy.
But it's 550,000 routes.
Right. Or if you have...
Or if you have VPN V4 running, it's 1.5 million, 2 million, 3 million.
Or 10 million.
Yeah,
you
10
usually
million
build, route. That was, we so, built for 10 million, 10, we built for top ends to 10 million in 2000. Now they build at double or triple that,
right,
or if not more.
So IBGP basically does it by sending one record at a time. Is that what we're saying?
Well, it doesn't. It packs, and it does as much as it can efficiently. But again, if you were trying to do incremental updates, if you just take just the physical size of the file and you run rsync even between two devices, two hosts across the network, and you just took and said, I have a 100 million records or 10 million records or whatever in a database.
In any database. MySQL, SQLite.
Yeah, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And you just have to synchronize those databases, and you have to do it near real time. And then you just realize you're hitting cap theorem. Man, you have a problem. Mm. I can either make the databases consistent, or I can figure out how to reduce the partitioning, the distance in the partition, or I have to reduce my accessibility. And since routing protocols just love accessibility, you know, that every router locally has total access all the time to the database that it's using. You know, you end up giving someplace, and where you usually give is in your consistency.
Right.
And so,
in other words, not everybody's databases are not up to date, and you're never.
Yeah.
And without and this corollary effect or the sequential effect is, your data you're never converged.
And we have 10% over 25 to 30 years that have never converged. Some of them have wonderful stories because even in the early 90s, I was tracking down this problem to try to look at it. And I kept tracking down one. Run routes is incredibly, this tells you how incredibly interworked the system was. Mm. We had this one route that fluctuated, and at that time there weren't that many, so I could track it down. I called down the university because it came from a university at that time, and I said, why does this route fluctuate? You got to tell me, or otherwise I'm going to blackball this one across the whole thing because it's costing. Because every time it fluctuates, it costs cycles,
Route flaps. Yeah, route flaps cost money.
They cost. And this one was fluctuating every couple minutes, and it was consistent over a year. I called down and he said, I called the guys. You know what they said? They could get a very cheap internet link. So it fluctuates. And so every time it fluctuates, they got this real cheap deal, you know, maybe, you know, $10 for the link, and they have a BGP pair across it. It fluctuates continuously because they have a cheap link. I said, you turn that guy to a static link, or it's going to get blackballed. You have a choice. They're spending $10.99 on it. It's costing everybody $100,000 because all the things that come and go.
Yeah.
Now, there are a whole bunch of people like that, and we eventually taught some operators to change it, but that's why it's costly.
Well, that's why we invented BGP damping.
Right,
and
that's where dampening came from.
That's where dampening came from, was that there was a bunch of dodgy links, and there were BGP routes that would flap, and the idea was that it was killing CPU on certain routers. But now we don't do BGP dampening because it doesn't make sense anymore.
Well, it's coming and going. It depends. It depends on the time and place. It's come and gone three times in three
in the
different
geographic
things.
Location. In some geographies, it still makes sense. If you have a lot of microwave links or something like that, dampening still can be
useful. So that the original purpose behind BGP dampening that I remember was a lot of routers couldn't recompute their tables and they couldn't synchronize.
Now you come to the real thing. Yeah. When you look at the computation that looks between two nodes. I got this here. There are 10 internal IBGP pairs.
Yes.
They're all going to send me the same thing, but for each one of those I have to recalculate the value. If I simply had a protocol that says, okay, I know what the update is. That's right. One update. This is the one thing. I pick one update from the things and say that's the master source. And I can track that instead of doing this route by route.
So this is where route reflectors come in, where route reflectors, you have like a master. Route reflectors replace this IBGP full mesh so that you do actually have a single source of truth.
Right. And that's why we started that, because we realized that would help the convergence. The problem is when it scales up to the route reflectors and the thing, that stops scaling. And several of the IGPs then put a third tier, but the problem is that created routes. So you can see that this methodology that's all distance vector, but first you had one layer, you had the route reflectors.
Oh,
you
had
the
clients, have hierarchical route reflectors.
And then you have a hierarchical route reflector, but then that puts two loads of convergence time.
Yes.
And there is a chance with the way they've some software has designed it, that it will, because it's inside and doesn't have the loop. Thank you. It's inside and doesn't have the same loop protection.
Yes.
Because the cluster ID isn't really as strong when you do two in.
Yeah.
It's only one in. So do you put cluster ID in cluster ID? There's not the same protection, so there became some loops where it would.
Yeah, so it becomes more important to have the topology configured correctly and the speakers configured correctly to make it work. And the other thing that nobody ever thinks about when you do this is route reflectors are actually a form of aggregation. And any time you aggregate, you lose optimal pathing through your network.
Aggregation is lying.
Yeah, I mean, aggregation is a great thing to make your network scale. But every time you put aggregation in, it's just state optimization surface. You're reducing your state, and when you reduce your state, you must reduce your optimization. That's just it. It's just the way it works. I mean, I'm sorry.
And that's what I mean by lying. You reduce your state. Now, if you can, we didn't used to have databases for SQL that converge very briefly, quickly.
Yeah.
I used to have early SQL and it converged shouldn't say that word, but it converged very poorly.
Yeah, the old databases that we used to use were very poor in performance and they were not very optimized, and now we have a situation where the databases in our iPhones, there's a thing called SQLite, and I was reading a report last week saying that SQLite as a database is now faster than the file system. And that is unheard of. That is absolutely not the way it should
work. But because they're in every one of our phones, somebody spent a lot of money to optimize the
heck out of these things.
And for those who can't see it, Sue is waving her phone around.
Yeah. Yes, sorry.
She's about to hit me over the head with it.
And these guys have got all these little teeny phones, and I've got the girl phone, which is I want the big screen to see things.
You've wrapped it up in a safety.
Oh,
thing.
Yeah.
And when I mean safety, I'm thinking safe. Like you've actually got something to beat people over the head.
Well, that's because I often do, but no, we won't go there.
She's a working group co-chair.
You don't have a gavel, but you have a phone.
I have an iPhone, and it's got, in case you can't see it, it's got this three layer.
It's brutal.
It is brutal. You could run over it with a car, and it still works.
Yeah, we imagine that probably too.
I would be worried about the car if the car hit that thing.
But so our database exchange, when we were doing software for like ISIS, we really worked at how to improve the database exchange.
Yeah.
We know it's a database exchange. You look at how it's working.
Yes.
We haven't taken that same type of...
So you learned the lessons in ISIS from BGP. You were there when BGP was first sort of put together. And when you came to doing ISIS, you looked at database exchange and...
I was doing ISIS first... Right. Run and a BGP at the same time.
We can get on to OSI later on and talk about why the advantages of ISIS. Or not.
Well, I mean, the ISIS...
It at least has a dash, so it's not a four-letter protocol.
Yes, it's not a four-letter, although one might consider it. Remember, the ISO people in some of the early things came from deployment. Later on, they weren't, but... Even in there's a was a lot of in the early days a lot of back and forth between the really good guys in ISO and stuff.
Usually,
and
those usually shouting matches.
Well, sometimes it was shouting matches with the same person when you had Dana Rand talking to Dave Oren for here's my ISO side, here's my IP side. You know, it should be a very interesting conversation. But the same is true. Yakov had, here's my ISO site, here's my non-ISO site. It goes on.
Yeah.
But the point is, in the reality, you have to learn from every other protocol. You have to learn from what you're doing, or your software doesn't improve.
And I think the things that we learned in the differences between Path Vector or BGP and, say, ISIS and SPF was there was an absolute focus on messaging between the routers.
There was an absolute focus on policy that kept a policy barrier between you and me.
Yeah.
And if you think it was all about BGP databases, no, it was all about I need protection so garbage doesn't flow.
So I don't accept routes from my neighbor that cause my network to fail or give me suboptimal pathing.
Yeah,
and that's what BGP was intended to do.
I want to do what I want to do. I want it ruled by policy. If you think it was all about the database, that wasn't it. You know, it was good enough.
Yeah. So we've gotten to the point now where it works, so therefore we add to it until it fails.
Yes.
That seems to be our mode of operation.
Every time I look in on what's happening in the IDR and the routing protocols working groups, I just shake my head.
You need a bigger phone, Sue.
Because it's just, what they're doing to the MPLS just beggars the minds. You know, and they seem to be going in about, like 5 or 10 different directions to achieve the same thing. I don't mind them doing the same thing twice in 2 different ways, but to do it in 5 or 10 different ways just boggles my mind. Duplicated effort.
The question is as whether I don't like 5 different ways, but you know, you go to a vertical and you say, "Is this what solves the problem for the vertical?"
That's where multiple ways of doing it does make sense, because you may have different verticals that need different things. But it's hard to separate that from I'm writing a draft to have my name on a draft.
And see, that's
the difficult.
I'm writing my draft so that I can have something for my company to differentiate.
Right. I have a customer and they're waving an $X million check at me and I need a solution, and you can't tell me I'm wrong to do this because I have a customer with an $X million check.
Yeah.
But the reality is your salespeople on the other side are saying, well, yeah, we want this $X million check, but we want the next one too. So we've got to make sure that whatever you do in the IETF is phrased in a way that we can actually build a proprietary
market and creates both sales, not just one sale,
but
solves one problem.
And locks them into me.
Locks them in, and that's a deadly embrace. If instead what we really, which is what I told Tony when we went back, when I was doing the original software, I said it is much better to take a DevOps approach to look at the base algorithms and fix them.
Yeah.
And to be honest, it looks like the market after, 15 years is come to that, because what we were just talking about is fixing the base fundamental things we said were good enough then.
Yeah, but aren't good enough now.
That's what I want to see.
We're scaling up the number of devices. We're scaling up the speed of the devices. We're scaling up the speed of the links. And we're also scaling up, but what is scaling down is the number of operators we have.
We
can't keep having a ratio of 20 to 1 or 100 to 1.
But I am working on that piece. That piece we are working on.
I'm just sort of, I'm trying to fill in the back piece here is there are fundamental shifts in the industry that are making BGP stressed, right?
Yes.
And the processes by which we create protocols are being stressed in ways that we haven't had before, simply because of the growth of not just the number of devices, the types of devices, the fact that we now have extra CPU and unlimited memory in routers.
Yes.
It just changes a whole bunch of things. We were never able to...
But at the same time, what we've used that for is to build lots of new features in.
Yeah.
And every feature you add ossifies or hardens the implementations in a way that makes it very difficult to make a change.
It's also very difficult to decrypt which ones are just Chrome. Like, cars in the 1960s, they had enough engine power to start putting on and production. The cost of metal work dropped to the point where putting chrome bits on and fins, remember?
Mm-hmm.
And the cars looked $1 million, but then the engine power ran out because they had so much chrome and stuff that they were dragging around tons of metal.
And that's the point. You're dragging around tons of metal. We have to come back and look at the very basics.
Right. So we were talking last night about BGP and using a link state algorithm instead of IBGP.
I was wondering when you were going to get back to that. See, I was just waiting. I could see it in the back of Greg's head. Like
I do, I get out of the tunnel and grabs me. By the way, Greg, sometime we should pick up the concept that you mentioned here, which is less operators, less configuration. Mm. And one of the things that leads us into that for BGP is to be able to have both convergence, but to be able to have not 20 places to put the policy. Okay?
Yeah, right.
And if the policy barrier is really a policy barrier for the whole AS, being able to put it in a centralized place, being able to put it in a centralized place, maybe yeah. governed by an SPF,
well,
I
policy
did bring
can
it
be,
back.
So I think the interesting thing here is that policy can be centralized and then distributed to a number of devices. So the challenge with BGP has always been configuring policy on a large number of devices meant that the policy on some of the devices wasn't necessarily the same as it was
exactly.
on others.
And then that actually causes loops, that causes churn, that causes all sorts of garbage.
Exactly.
So there's two parts. There's two parts to yeah. solving that, and that's why I said we're trying that. You know, the Yang model work. We're putting BGP Yang models.
I think you just said a four-letter word.
I know. I said a four-letter word. You know,
I sat in the Yang
do you want to explain?
The other day, and I'm sure they're still arguing about red, yellow, and green words. It's an incredible, must be a really difficult group to run, that one. You know.
It's a difficult group to interact. I mean,
I'm going to take the fifth on that one.
just to digress, I mean, I was sitting in a meeting and somebody said, we're going to start putting these models into GitHub. And some people were actually throwing down and having a complete hissy fit. I thought for one moment I was about to see a 60-year-old man lie on the floor and bash his hands and feet on the ground and go wah, 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 because he wanted to see them in ASCII text. And I was going, my God, it's 2017. I can't believe it. But anyway.
So link state. So there are actually two ways.
We'll pick that topic up on another podcast. Please let us do that.
So there are actually two places you could use link state in BGP. Way, way back when Daniel Walton and Alvaro Retana and I were at Cisco, I mean, this is like, I don't know, sometime in the dark ages. We used to kid Don Slice about being older than dirt, and I think we're all older than dirt now. You know, we used to ask
that
you,
like, older than Ash, dude.
we used to ask you, like,
burned out.
Hey, Slice, what was life like before there was dirt? When did you invent the broom? No, I'm feeling pretty old myself. Yeah. But anyway, you know, Daniel actually coded up this thing where he basically just took the ISIS flooding pieces, not ISIS. And the reason you use ISIS for this, and people go, well, why don't you use OSPF? And it's primarily a coding issue. OSPF implementations, it doesn't have to be this way, but many of OSPF implementations actually combine the flooding code with the rest of the state machine, with
yes.
the neighbor state machine and things like this. Hmm. Most ISIS implementations don't do that. The flooding implementation is actually in different code.
Then, when you say flooding implementations, what you mean is the neighbor discovery and the database exchange.
The database exchange is actually in a separate piece of code. Like EIGRP and ISIS both went down the path of separating physically in a different coding file with an API between. There's actually an API between the ISIS process says I want to send a certain LSP, and it actually makes an API call. To a
right.
separate
Do you know
file.
How that happened in Cisco? I do. Oh, but
anyway, so Rebecca, we got to get through the link state part before we diverge into another topic. But anyway, so that's the reason ISIS was used. So Daniel started playing with just taking the BGP LSP, the BGP TLVs, and just sticking them in the ISIS flooding process.
Right.
And just getting rid of IBGP.
Yeah.
And it was called MRT or CMCRT or something like that. I don't remember.
And then what would happen is, just to cap down on some basics here, and tell me if I get this right because I'm working on the fly. You would take the BGP TLVs or the BGP, the rib entries for the BGP.
Mm-hmm.
You would take the data structure, put it into an ISIS flooding mechanism, which would then start announcing it to neighbors, which would be running ISIS. So that's now a link state protocol. So that's a flood. Right,
mm-hmm.
That's any neighbor that's in the system,
right.
And everybody's database will then, everybody who's running an ISIS and is a part of that IGP will now have a copy of that database, and it will then propagate across.
Right.
Now, ISIS is built optimally to flood records across any SPF algorithm.
Is that right? So the thing is, you're not using SPF in this case at
no.
all.
No.
You're just
SPF
using the
SPF protocols
flooding.
Rely on those databases.
Yes, that's exactly
they
right.
They have to be in sync. They
that's
have
right.
to be converged.
Right.
They have to be
and
stable.
And believe it or not, given the data I first was working on, that will take out 50 to 70% of the delay.
Yeah. And that's been implemented, tested in the lab, never drafted, never deployed. It's just one of those interesting ideas that came up years ago.
Yes.
And, you know, fell by the wayside in the process of time moving on. But it's an interesting idea.
Well, the point is that in an SPF, I think the important part is that in an OSPF or ISIS, every device in the system, in the AS, must have an identical database or they won't converge on the same decisions, right? There will not be a shortest path calculation that's accurate. It will actually be looped if they don't have a consistent database.
That's correct. So all you're counting on is the consistency of the database across all the devices. You're still using BGP decision process.
Yep.
It looks
and
exactly
even,
like BGP.
But the benefit of that, and again, this is based on on data tests we did at that same time period. If you have the database, one of the problems with BGP is the database comes in a little bit at a time instead of a lump. Mm. If you had the base lump that you could say, here's my lump now, you can improve your processing of BGP's database. Mm. You can improve it so that, again, you cut another percent down. These are easy.
Right. Mm-hmm. So what you're saying is because BGP, let me try and just break that down and make sure I understand that. Because you're saying that BGP has this announce and then withdrawal, you don't actually get bulk updates or bulk deletes or bulk adds, or you don't get a consistent database view. It could change at any time, and that affects your coding.
You're always in an incremental case. You never have all the database. If you knew you were processing all the database, there's some efficiencies you can write in a code that says, okay, I know I'm pulling in a whole database.
Yep.
It may be, and it's what these exterior peers. Instead of taking the same exterior view you got from two peers, you know, one here, one here, okay, is it the same? If it's the same, one.
Well, is that why we started to have in BGP implementations have like a neighbor rib as well as the complete rib as well as, and then the fib itself? And that's literally because you're starting to break down the data structures to improve the computational speed.
Well, that's some of the smarts that we put in to be able to handle this strange...
To work around the limitations.
And to
scale out.
Yeah.
Because I can run BGP best path up to MED.
Yep.
And then I can pour all the best path from all these sub databases into a big database, mm-hmm. and then run BGP best path beyond MED, and I still end up with the same output. So I can actually spread it across multiple processors.
And if you have
multiple CPU cores,
yes, multiple CPU cores.
And now because we do actually have multiple CPU cores,
that's
because
exactly
creating
right.
multi-threaded code underneath that is hard. So it makes more sense to multi-thread. To distribute processes amongst the CPU cores
exactly
instead of multi-threading
right.
your process.
That's exactly right.
And because once you've done the flooding process for ISIS and OSPF carefully, you also know how to handle that flooding process in a more effectively. Again, what you're really talking about is looking at the processes and making them more efficient, picking the places you've got a really good process, and then taking that. That's refactoring to make it better based on the same thing you're doing with SQLite and your phone. What they did is they looked at how all those processes updated, and they multi-threaded, they multi-cored, and they made it, in some senses, secure.
Mm.
All of this is possible. It's just that's where we should spend the money rather than adding more weight.
Yeah.
Because...
Now, if you really want to get radical, Greg, then you could actually replace eBGP...
Well,
not entirely.
No.
But you could rethink the way eBGP is done. You could actually run. There's actually a paper out there. I doubt you'll ever find it because I'm not sure it was published in a major journal or whatever called Past State Vectors. And you could actually run. You could actually treat each AS as a node in the graph. Now, what Past State Vectors does it backwards.
Right.
So let's just start with the simple case, which is I take every AS and I treat it as a node, as if it's a router in SPF.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Right?
Yep.
And all of my inner AS connections are actually edges on the same graph. So I actually advertise connectivity to other ASs like I would with a link state.
So every AS becomes like a type 1, a router?
Yes, that's exactly.
And every path to it becomes a type 2, becomes a link.
And then
becomes a link.
And then you just run SPF. OSPF type 2.
Okay. And then you just run
SPF.
And the real trick in all of this is how you do...
very optimal.
How you do the... But the thing, remember, BGP is about policy.
Mm.
But you can take some of the current next generation policy engines and rethink how your policy's doing and make it work with that. Now, yeah. We did...
Well, this is what past state vectors do. I said it's backwards, right? The reason they do it backwards is because of the policy. So in reality, in a past state vector, what you do is you actually reverse the tree so that the inner AS connection becomes a node and the AS itself becomes the edge on the graph. And you actually run your SPF backwards. You mean you run a standard SPF, but you're running it policy point to policy point because all of your policies hang off of the inner AS connection, not off of the AS itself. So that's the way a past state vector works, is you actually reverse the tree.
Yeah, and what you're saying is the connectivity is the node. That's kind of like what ISIS does when it focuses on the link, not the router.
Yeah. Well, it's like a pseudo node, right?
Yes.
It's like a pnode or a DR, which is a pnode in OSPF, right? Yep. So you're actually creating a pnode in the
pnode. You're going to make me go back and get my ISIS textbooks out and start reading them again.
Just watch my videos. I've heard they're pretty good. I don't know.
Plug away.
But so the
I've never watched them.
So the point is there are actually, if you look at it, there are three types of policy. Who am I going to pair with?
Yep.
What I'm going to aggregate. And what routes am I going to come across? Once you start recharting your policy, you can then determine algorithmically, and again, this is based on some of the same thing, research done, proved, but then said, well, oh, it's good enough, and we'll add more weight. You can actually prove whether you're going to have holes based on your policy. And see, that's one of the problems we have right now, is you either get holes or you get loops based on the very policy.
Hence churn.
Churn. If we could eliminate a lot of the churn, we could eliminate, you know, either by cutting the convergence or making some fundamental changes in our concept of policy. Not changing what the user wants to do, but how our engines work. And we really need to...
It's kind of like a shift from an inline 8 to a V8.
That's it.
Yeah, you get this massive improvements in... a whole range of different things just by shifting the architecture slightly. But guess what? It's still the powertrain coming out the back of the motor is still a piece of metal spinning around and around.
Exactly.
Right? And that's sort of what you say.
But if we could encourage people to spend the money there, going from a straight inline to a V8, you can suddenly have a really fun car. I come from the Detroit Motor Capital.
I mean, the V8s did a whole lot of interesting things. They actually reduced the size of cars because you didn't have to have so much space up front because car is wide, you wanted it to be wide, not long. And so a V8...
is more square.
It was squarer, so you could have a shorter bonnet.
Like many of the people here.
Yeah.
Well, we have more round-shaped, very round-shaped people.
Much more
here.
Upholstered. Generously upholstered is how I've often been described.
Okay, well plead stuffed. The fifth again.
that sort of thing. But those types of ideas are hard to explain to people who have... Like, if you've spent a number of years mastering, say, the concept of BGP and how it works, but if you've never coded, you wouldn't understand the intricacies of these things. That's something that strikes me.
Right.
Yes.
And actually, there was a discussion I was on Slack the other day, on one of the Slacks I'm on. Who knows?
You're on a lot of them.
I'm on a lot of Slack, so I don't even know which one it was. But we were talking about what coders need to learn about networking. And a lot of people say, well, you know, you just need to learn some very basic stuff if you're a coder about networking. Yeah, you just need to learn the network is not free or whatever. In reality, actually understanding how the routing protocol converges is actually a big deal.
I used to send all my coders through a basic network course.
Yep.
And many of them bitched, moaned, other things, told me things about myself that I was not happy to hear. Because I said, either you take this course, and this is one of the things to test whether you have enough brains to code for me.
Yeah.
Because if you can't come and understand the fundamentals and theories, now how many of these guys, 10, 15 years later, thanked me because they were successful
in understanding the customer?
Not only the customer, they wrote better codes, they got better jobs, they got better things, because they really, I made them, horrible witch that it was, made them understand what they were coding.
Over the years. You've gone from horrible witch to witch. Just sorry.
Actually, I started out with that NSFNet wench. I went from wench to witch to horrible witch to back to witch. I don't know.
So, do you think we could ever see a BGP where an IETF draft where the IBGP is a link state? I mean, is there any appetite for that sort of thing, or do people want to focus on other areas?
I believe there has been, in the last year, 4 different requests. Mm. Whether
we're actually doing the opposite, though, aren't we? Mm. BGP link state.
Yeah, and this is the confusing part, right? And this. So why don't you summarize what BGP link state is?
You can't see the look on Sue's face. No. It's quite entertaining.
You know, as a chair, I have to listen to a lot. But when I actually have coded this stuff and worked with coders and developed everything and people give me ideas, I can't sit there in the mic and go, it's considered bad chair form.
What BGP link state is?
Essentially, you take... So the basic problem is this. If you have a multi-area OSPF or ISIS, like a multi-flooding domain network, and you have some way of a controller that is using BGP as your southbound API, this is the basic problem that they're trying, the initial problem set, then you have no way of dragging your link state database out of, I mean, you could GRE tunnel it or something, but there's no simple way to get the link state database out of each of the flooding domains into a controller, so the controller has a total view of all the link state databases in the network. Mm. Okay? So what you do is you grab all of your, you have one BGP speaker in each flooding domain or two, whatever it is, and you actually grab the link state database and you morph it into BGP TLVs.
Right.
And send it across BGP to the controller. So you're actually not making BGP best path. You're not doing anything with this data. BGP just becomes a
transport.
A message bus.
Even a transport. It's a message bus.
Right?
What comes out of the OSPF is, you know, here's a bunch of records. You put them on BGP, and then the BGP becomes a signals. Here's a package of SPF database entries and sends them across. Instantly, my reaction is, BGP is not a message bus. A message bus is RabbitMQ or ZeroMQ. Right.
And these were questions I asked the original persons who gave me the same comments about some of my developers did, which and other things. And they never gave me a good example except that they couldn't get a link into these routers except through BGP. And I kept saying...
And you're like going, well, you know, what's Yang? What's gRPC
and they said, well, they don't trust that, and I'm like, is that my standard?
Well, but the beautiful thing is now that we have the information in BGP, the link state database in BGP, you can just go the next step and say, we can just run SPF on that information.
And that's true.
That's true. Yes.
And to be frank,
you could take the SPF algorithm just has to run over a data set. And in theory, once you have the data set, now would it be optimal?
And
would it be fast if you're using a BGP data structure?
So now you're using BGP. Now you're using BGP flooding.
Yeah, which is pretty stupid.
With
we're just
SPF.
Giving you the description of why we think
that's a bad idea.
Yeah. But you think it was shortest path first with Dijkstra,
which is. But to me, it sounds. But to me, the BGP data structure inside of the operating system wouldn't be optimized for SPF calculations.
Yes.
You would actually be taking several steps backwards.
That would be that was my initial question to these gentlemen. Mm. To be honest, I have never gotten anything other than this is the only way we could get the customer. And remember, what they're doing with it in the end is they're using it for SDN processing. And again, my base question as a person...
Effectively, what they've done is turn BGP into an API call.
Yes.
And that's... Like, as somebody who's on the outside, not been involved in the working group, that's stupid. Like, that is butt-ass stupid.
As a chair, I have to say, if this is like back to Yakov, is this money that's going to come Shakespeare?
Absolutely is the very epitome of if your only tool is a hammer, every problem looks like a nail.
Yes.
Even if your nail is a screw.
As an individual, it's just mind-boggling because it doesn't do what they want, right?
And it's going to cause so much challenge, like the code to do that is going to be just bafflingly stupid.
Right, you're going to end up with a million lines of code in BGP. Effectively.
Well, it's the first step and down the path
gone out
of turning,
and, they, like, and they've gone out and sold this stuff to some people. And my whole question is, do these people really know what they're buying?
I'd rather improve the base.
I'd rather...
But this is the epitome of the problem with BGP today.
Yeah.
I mean, when you started out saying, what is the problem with BGP today?
BGP, to me, it's
the trash can of the internet. I mean, it's like, oh, look, you know, I have this problem and I can solve it with BGP. Oh, it's been solved before?
But BGP looks like a Rube Goldberg machine to me. You know, you put a marble in the top and it goes around and the little thing goes around and flag goes up, you know, and ding, 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 ding. And then at the end it goes, well done. You put a marble in the top, you know. And that's pretty much how I see BGP, right? And if you're going to start telling me you're going to use it as an API call by starting to load data into a BGP structure so you can control it from your SDN, so you don't have to build a southbound API out of your SDN controller,
Again, when I looked at them and asked questions, they said, well, you held this up. I'm like, I'm asking simple, basic questions.
Yeah.
And now, I haven't identified the individuals or the companies, but I really... And they took it as a personal... Again, you winch.
Yeah.
You know, no...
But overall, regardless of this independent particular situation, I just think this is the attitude in the IT industry that we have to face down in the networking world.
Yeah, particularly,
That I'm going to take this router, a 1RU unit, and I'm going to make it carry... every route in the internet, and I'm going to make it have every feature that you can ever imagine.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to take BGP, and I'm going to make all these features work in BGP. And we just do this, and we do it over and over again.
And that's where Microsoft SQL Server failed.
Yeah.
Right? And so just, I always like to say, there's nothing new in networking that isn't being solved in some adjacent IT thing. And this is what Microsoft SQL Server tried to do. They tried to be all of the SQL things that everybody wanted to do.
Yeah.
And
that's now exactly right.
It's really terrible.
It's not great, right? And Microsoft keeps making efforts to optimize it. And, you know,
but not only not great, every time they keep going it, having another projects that are trying to use it, they keep either blowing away their current stuff or breaking stuff or not making it useful for things where SQLite is
This is why I guess companies like Google and Facebook, like we're seeing big presence here from Google promoting their views on certain IETF standards, and I've never quite understood why, but part of it would be is that they just don't want to see stupid APIs. They don't want to see people using BGP as an API, and they're trying to get things like gRPC up off the ground. I mean, let's pretend that other issues like encryption that Chrome can't break and data privacy and stuff like that, let's assume that that's a different challenge. That's a straight-up business defense, you know, revenue defense mechanism. But they would literally like to see people stop doing stupid stuff.
Well, this is why I'm always encouraging providers and any large network operator to get involved here, because we don't... honestly, you walk around here and there is one financial organization that I know of that's represented in the IETF.
I'm going to be talking to... So I'm recording a show tomorrow with some enterprise people who are here to help contribute standards that are more enterprise-centric. And if you're listening to this, we did a show with EDCO, which is the Enterprise Data Center Operators. Ethan recorded it at IETF 98. If you look that up and have a listen, he talks to people about, you know, the sort of standards that enterprise data centers want as opposed to the sort of standards that web-scale data centers want.
But the other thing I would encourage people to do is to, as engineers, and this is just at a personal level, every one of us can do this, is to stop thinking about how to add more tools to the Leatherman or the Swiss Army knife or whatever the case might be, and start actually learning that, yeah, when I go out to garden, it's really neat to have my needle nose pliers and 4 knife blades and my, you know, whatever on my single tool.
But you're not going to dig a grave with them.
Exactly. You know? So it's time to start thinking about actually building networks that are purpose-fit to particular environments and to stop this...
One-size-fits-all.
And the other thing...
I mean, that's a very tempting idea, right? You know, there's protocols for every type of thing. But is it real? Are networks really that divergent that one size doesn't fit all?
So I think some application environments are.
But the point is, it's not, you know, just go with the tool on the Mikata, one of the Japanese firms, started remaking some of the very basic tools at the absolute highest quality.
Yeah.
And found that people actually would rebuy because suddenly their saw, their whatever, was so good that everyone said, well, why am I doing it? It was a simple purpose. It was elegant.
Mm.
If we start out with these elegant tools and then go to purpose fit them, that's a whole different thing than saying this lump of code, we're going to purpose fit.
Yeah. If I think you have a balance.
There is a balance, And, I mean, the fear is that you end up with, you know, like, look at what's happened in the Ethernet. You've got the IEEE with its SPB. You've got the IETF with Trill. You've got MEF reinventing Trill and SPB in their own weird way. Yeah, you've got the Broadband Forum doing it its own weird way. You've got people reinventing Ethernet at layer one with PON. Mm-hmm. You've got, you know, blah, 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 blah. It's just...
Yeah, but it's a balance, right? We do this, right? What we tend to do in the networking industry is we buy devices that have every feature that has ever been invented since 1994, and then we put them in networks and we configure them randomly, and every network ends up being a snowflake.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's bad. So now let's DevOps it, and then we'll just throw DevOps at the problem, and that'll solve the problem because now I don't have a CLI to deal with. Every network is still a snowflake.
Yes.
Okay, well... Then I'll just treat all my networking gear as cattle, and now I solve every problem with exactly the same solution. Well, that's not really helpful either, right? That's the opposite end of the problem.
Yeah.
No, I mean, there are probably a handful. I don't know how many, and it's going to evolve as business evolves. Maybe there's only 12 different problems out there that really need to be solved. Maybe it's 15. I actually don't know the number, right? But they are still distinct problems. And so, you know, there's a balance.
There's a difference between the data center and the WAN.
Yes.
There's a difference between campus and the data center, although that's pretty subtle.
There's a difference between IoT routing.
Yeah. And HomeNet.
And HomeNet.
Yep. Yeah.
There are places out there.
Sensors are wireless meshes.
Yeah. I mean, there are different areas in the network where there are different possible solutions. That's okay.
But the basic algorithms, I mean, basic software,
and that's
Having sold and built equipment where I actually knew what to build and then what to change to deploy in sensors versus large networks versus REST, there are...
We don't know the building blocks. We just reinvent Lego blocks and it's ridiculous.
And to actually understand, and again, I'll give you the case of Mikata, if I pronounce that tool thing. A good tool for the right thing, people will pay a lot because suddenly it's very effective. Builders pay for their specific tools because they know their life. And we are not even realizing that that's what we have in this world and that our tools are so poor.
No, we stick a flat blade screwdriver on one end of a circular saw and a Phillips head screwdriver on the other end of the circular saw and call it the all-in-one tool.
and you wonder why our networks are beat up all the time.
Yeah,
and we can no longer pay for the money of... We used to pay to just have people fix what our tools break. Now we don't have the money to no longer...
Yeah.
And if
the challenge is also now as networks... As they get into specific use cases, at the end of the day, they still forward IP packets and Ethernet frames. So there must be commonalities between them in terms of monitoring and telemetry.
Well, this is with Lego.
Well, we can pick up that. That has been my passion for the last 5 years.
Hmm.
Well, you're going to have to promise your users to let me talk about how to solve the...
We will. We'll set it up. Okay. We'll make that happen because we've probably come. You have to be somewhere.
Oh yes, unfortunately I do. 10:50, half an hour ago.
So why don't you tell people where they can find you on the internet?
You can find me at the easiest way to look at for all of you who are BGP folks, look at ITF and look at the IDR working group, or you can get me at shares. That's shares at ndzh.com. That's NancyDavidZebraHarry.com. Thank you.
Thank you, Sue, for coming on the show. As always, what a pleasure it's been. And you know, we are only just winding up on this discussion.
We are just winding up.
I know.
It's a shame to cut it off at just where we are. So we definitely will get together, Russ.
Oh, I'm always at rule11.tech and sometimes at Packet Pushers whenever they graciously allow me to show up.
Oh, yeah. I think we're going to beat a a path to their door.
And Russ is always moving around, and he's very hard to trace down.
But no, I'm actually pretty easy to find. I mean, you just go to rule11.tech, and there's a comment form if you want to talk to me and stuff. It's great.
That's fine. Russ is very approachable. Don't let his gruff exterior manner put you off. Thank you both for joining us today, and thank you for listening to the show on the Packer Pushers. As always, you can find out more about this on our website at packerpushers.net. We recently overhauled everything on the website, and it's actually got this new slinky look. I'm quite proud of it, actually, although I didn't actually do the work. I'm just proud to see it looking good. So please do get over there. If you've got any feedback, any comments, any criticisms, please email us at packerpushers@gmail.com. And thanks to Huawei for their financial support that allowed us to come and attend this conference at IETF 99 in Prague. And thanks to Russ for hosting me, particularly for introducing me and getting people around. It's been a very valuable use of your resource. I appreciate your personal efforts.
Always welcome, Greg. Always.
Thanks so much for listening. And remember that too much technology would never be enough.